Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Henny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden and D. Quillen, your hosts for the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
So this week we're going to talk to Allison Moore.
Okay.
Who actually was an SMU connection. I mean, we weren't there at the same time, but she went to
right,
SMU.
Yeah, nice.
Sort of a not cohort, if you will. Or a hort, either way. She wrote the play Slasher.
She did.
Yep. And then we're also going to talk to Lucia Struss, who was one of the actors in Slasher. Now, a little bit of story behind this interview. We were told that a bunch of the people were going to show up.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the actors from Slasher were going to show up. But they were invited, so it wasn't like a thing where, you know, like it was scheduled and they didn't, you know, make it or whatever. But anyway, the interviews were scheduled the night after the gala.
Yeah, that had an effect on several potential interviewees.
Yeah, so Lucia was the only one who was a real trooper.
Yeah.
They went to bed, I think she said they went to bed at 5:30 in the morning, got up, came in, did the interview with us, and was very pleasant and great. I think they had a show that afternoon too, didn't they?
Yeah.
So special thanks to Lucia for coming in, sitting down with us and talking to us even after that night before, you know.
Yeah, she's a trooper.
She is a trooper, and she didn't do a whole lot of trash talking about the other kids.
Well, I don't. Yeah, not
at least not on the podcast. Not the stuff that we recorded. So,
but anyway. Her ears did bleed off mic, though.
Yeah,
she did kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was that too.
I'm kidding.
Anyway, so that's what we're gonna do this week. We're gonna talk to those two.
We have a Slasher full time.
Yep, it's the Inexplicable Dumb Show Horror Show this week.
Sweet.
Here we go.
Carlin Effect, go. Things I wonder about the FBI's list of the 10 most wanted criminals. Does the FBI search harder for number 3 than they do for number 7? I would. Otherwise, why have the numbers at all? These are the kinds of thoughts that keep me from making any real progress in life.
Thus saith George.
Thus ends his catechism.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet.
Yet I ask you to take time to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them. And they don't all play,
don't
in, the
all
gutter,
play
of course,
in the gutter, of course. Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show.
They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's for the children.
It's time once again for some deep theater.
Allison Moore. I went to high school with somebody named Allison Moore.
Oh.
I just realized that.
Are you back, man?
I'm here, yeah.
Good?
Yeah. Sorry,
right?
I was a little trip down to Amnesia Lane. I'm sorry, yeah. I'm going to edit all this out for myself.
I figured.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, welcome.
Shortest interview in history.
Yeah. Thanks
and
for coming
thank
in.
You. Yeah. Perfect.
Loved your play. All right.
Yes. So, Slasher.
Yes.
Other than just, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where did the idea come from?
There's a kind of amazing article a couple of years ago that I read in Texas Monthly Magazine that was about the making of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay.
And so that was a big sort of point of inspiration for me because it talked about the conditions under which they shot that movie are sort of incredible. Like, it was the middle of August. They were shooting outside mostly, or in this abandoned house that they had found in the Texas Hill Country. So it was 100 degrees.
Right.
I mean, it was horrible. They had a van was their sort of costume, you know, like there was no trailer for any of the actors or anything like that. They used actual animal carcasses.
Oh, wow.
For some things. And so the smell was really, because you're out there in the sun and there were bugs all over the place and there were no stunt people. Do you know what I mean? So all of the actors had to do their own, and there were all kinds of injuries and craziness. And I was just, so I was just really struck by the conditions that they had to film in, and how, like, when you are really shooting something with very little money, that things can go the potential for things to go horribly wrong is really large and potentially sort of comic. So that was a big, you know, sort of jumping off point of inspiration for me. And also the woman, and I can't remember her name, I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember her name, but the woman who played the last girl in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, was just, like, by all accounts, a total trooper, just sort of like did anything they asked her to do. And the movie went on to become this huge, gigantic phenomenon. Right. The success of Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the reason there are so many horror movies made today. Mm-hmm. Because before that, they had really been seen as kind of a niche genre, and they weren't really considered a mass market appeal. It was only sort of like, freaks who wanted to go see this kind of stuff. And suddenly you have this movie that becomes a worldwide phenomenon. On paper, it never made any money for anybody who, you know, none of the actors who were all working on, you know, a percentage of net, essentially, you know, they got like $50 and then they're like, and when this movie hits, you know, you would get X. And this, so they never saw any money from this. And I was also really interested in the power dynamic of that. It seemed really interesting to me. So that sort of was the genesis of it.
So through this process, were you a horror film fan before? And
no,
is it on both ends. So do you look at the genre now differently now that you've written the play, sort of?
Definitely. And so it's not like I had never seen a horror movie. I certainly had seen, you know, I had seen the original Friday the 13th and the original Halloween, which was like one of the scariest movies ever as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And, you know, some of those, like, so from the early 80s, I had seen a bunch of those kinds of movies when I was a kid. But I'm not by any stretch of the imagination a horror buff. But as I started sort of thinking about this, I was like, oh, I really need to watch a bunch of horror movies. And so I did a lot of research in that way, and I discovered that there still are a lot of sort of subgenres within horror, and figured out, like, oh, which are the ones that, what would, like, it was interesting to think about what's the sort of genre of horror movie that they're trying to make in the play versus what are the kinds of horror movie tropes that I want to reference in the play. Right. Like, so that those are actually sort of two different things. And sort of figuring that out was kind of fun. And so I talked to all my friends who are super horror movie fanatics and about some stuff to watch and some stuff I couldn't watch. It was too scary. Other things I discovered, that if I got it on DVD and would watch it with the commentary track, that like put enough distance between me and
buffer,
it,
yeah,
that it was less scary, but I could still sort of watch it with a critical eye to sort of figure out, like, oh, I could use that. I could, you know, figure out, like, I knew there had to be a way to get sort of like the image of the mother in the wheelchair. Like, that's such kind of an iconic horror movie thing, you know, like all of that stuff with the, you know, the suddenly the, you know, the last girl or the main girl has to suddenly be in her bra. And someone was telling me, I haven't seen it, but my director actually went and saw My Bloody Valentine. And apparently there is an extended sequence, like chase sequence, where a woman, one of the girls is totally naked because she's like having sex with this guy or whatever when the killer shows up, right? So what does she do? She puts on some high heels and grabs a gun and does this extended chase sequence, totally nude in pumps with a gun. You know, and I was like, see, that's exactly that is exactly the kind of thing that I am fascinated by.
Boy, like, that's an interesting dichotomy. Yeah, I mean, it's exploitation, but powerful at the same time. It's okay because she has a gun, I guess. I don't know.
She's in control.
Yeah, but I mean, like, who puts on heels to run around, to run away from someone?
Well, there, no. We can't sacrifice anything. You can't sacrifice fashion. I mean, let's just be honest. No, but you're right. I mean, it's always that thing of, you know, oh, is my hair okay? And then, okay, now I can run.
Right.
So, yeah.
Did she fall over a leaf? I mean, because they always, like, put the heels on and run.
And then trip over something.
And there's a leaf, and then all of a sudden they fall over.
Yes.
You know? It's always comical. I mean, from the standpoint of, you know, why would you fall over a leaf?
But. Right.
You're a native Texan.
Yeah. Well, all right. I can't technically claim native status. I was not born there.
Okay. All right.
But I got there as fast as I could.
Okay. Okay. Where are you? Which part of Texas are you from? Are you from the Hill Country?
San Antonio.
Oh yeah, it's a beautiful country down there. I have to ask because the and a lot of that's the actors too, but a lot of it's the writing.
Mm-hmm.
The method of speech is the best way, because it's not really a dialect. It's actually just a way of talking.
Yeah.
For the actors, for the characters anyway, was spot on. I lived in Dallas for a while. Actually, I went to SMU.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And,
go so, ponies.
Yeah. Woo, go ponies. Sorry that we'll go on now, but, I just thought that you had nailed that method of speech, that real Southern drawl, you know, especially with the church. I mean, I just almost said the church lady. I really almost said the church lady.
Wow. Yeah. That's copyrighted.
Backward mask it or something. But anyway, I just thought that was fantastic. And I think you have to have lived in Texas for a while, or at least visited for an extended period of time to really understand what that is.
Yeah.
And so congratulations on that. That was hilarious. And the ringtones. That's the thing we walked out
yeah,
of.
Yeah, we loved
the
ringtones.
That's the thing we walked out of the theater laughing about the most was the different ringtones. It looks like it was a fun process. I mean, it just the play itself looked like it was just a blast to work on.
It was a blast to write. It was a blast to work on with the actors. You know, had a great time. I mean, there's a lot of technical stuff. So, of course, there were times when, you know, you sort of think about like, now, wait, where do we have to do? Like, how do we get her over the tub and get the pump in the tub to have enough pressure to spurt up the blood and the, you know, okay, take it back. Let's do it again. You know, so, wow, so yeah. There was some of that technical kind of stuff that was that you just have to sort of slog through. But for the most part, it was really, really fun. It was just really fun to work on.
Well, I have to say, I've never had an interview where I talked about theater and tubs that splurted blood and having to get the right pressure. And let's go back and do this again.
Right.
Now, the relationship between the mother and the daughter, right? You're being exploited. No, I'm not being exploited. How is this played? Have you had feedback from women? How do they see this?
It's interesting. I've had a lot of women who are sort of in their 20s say, it's so great that you're writing about this and sort of talking about this, because I feel like this is not something that, you know, people are sort of talking about. And they also really identify with Sheena as being a powerful sort of character in a great way. And then I've also talked to older women who are, you know, in their 50s or things like that, who are, you know, like, thank you for, you know, like, it's, and so they really identify with Frances.
Right.
Because they're, you know, very much appreciative of the fact that voice who's saying, you know, we haven't gotten that far. We are still being exploited. This is, you know, we don't have equality. That voice is being heard. And even though it's being heard from this sort of crazy lady who's held up as, you know, like, see how crazy she is, you know, what the big movement of the play is to sort of say, oh, this woman is totally crazy and over the top. And then like, oh, but she actually has a point,
right.
You know, that this is that what she's saying is still relevant. The method about, you know, in which she might go about addressing some of that stuff, maybe not so much, but that her, the actual ideas that she's, the ideas that she's talking about are still relevant.
One of the best moments of the play for me was when, they're sitting across the table from the bomb. Here again, nobody's seen the play. They're going to be listening to this going, bombs, blood, what? But they're sitting across the table making the blood. And then I think it's Frances that looks up and says, you know, we have a whole lot in common, you and I. I thought, wow, that's spot on.
Yeah.
Just totally spot on.
We had to cut one of my favorite jokes in the whole play that only like, you know, 10 people in the audience would ever get. But where they're in that sort of conversation about we have a lot of in common and, you know, Christy Garcia used to say, you know, why do you think you called me? And Frances would say, I thought to myself, what would Andrea Dworkin do? but it ended up getting cut. But it is that interesting, because Andrea Dworkin actually did partner with evangelical Christian or conservative Christians about pornography, like, because that was a big, huge issue for her. And she was able to sort of seek them out and find some common ground with them, which I think is totally fascinating.
Yeah, the common ground ideas. I mean, that's the whole point. The mother and the mother and the daughter had trouble finding that common ground, but she was able to find it. I mean, it was really well done. Yeah. A lot of fun. And I think I was the only person in the theater that laughed out loud at the joke of I've got a bad feeling about this. I think I was the only one.
No,
or was it not? No. Maybe I was laughing too loud. Then I couldn't.
You drowned everybody out.
That was it. I was the loudest. I got a big kick out of that. So congratulations. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But I was going to say, what's next for this play?
Sure.
Is it going?
It's hopefully there are a couple of theaters who are interested. I don't have contracts signed
sure,
yet.
Sure, so sure.
Again, but there are a couple of theaters who seem seriously interested. And it looks like it's going to have a continued life.
Awesome.
That's great.
And are you working on a new project now?
I am. I'm writing something very, very new that I haven't even finished the first draft of it yet, but then I've been working on an adaptation of My Antonia, mm-hmm. the Willa Cather novel, mm-hmm. so very similar to Slasher.
You could work the tub in somewhere, I'm sure.
I'm sure you can. Yeah. Meat hooks or something.
Exactly. Yeah, so that'll open at, I'm developing that at Illusion Theater in Minneapolis, and that'll open sort of this time next year.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Thank you for stopping by.
Absolutely.
Want to stay current with the Inexplicable Dumb Show?
It's quick and it's easy and it's free.
Click the subscribe button at inexplicabledumbshow.com
and you'll never have to miss an episode.
I'm Lucia Struss and I play Francis in Slasher for the Humana Festival.
Which was hilarious, by the way.
You liked it.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. It was
awesome.
It seems like an ideal role because I've always wanted to have that scooter role, you know.
The one where you just sit on the scooter.
And just sit.
Well, you did more than that, but I love that first scene of you just grabbing around and grabbing the chicken.
Did you guys see it last night?
It was the second show we saw.
The
Friday
night.
Yeah.
Last night the scooter jammed and wouldn't stop.
No. So it was not stop. It was in motion.
It was in fast at the top of speed. There's a hare and a tortoise for the speeds.
Oh no.
And I always have it at the rabbit, you know? And it jammed and I just had to keep going around in a circle around the couch and around the couch, saying my lines, just going around and around. And then it finally stopped. But I had to stop on there's like a little section that goes down. It's the lift. Uh-huh. And, you know, if you're off by a quarter of an inch, you're screwed.
Right.
So while I'm telling my daughter I'm never going to speak to her again, I'm like checking, you know, like to see if I'm going to get down.
Yeah, safety, right? Yeah, You'll get down, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I'm like that, yeah. Oh, so that happened last night. It was wild.
Oh, wow. Now,
did you get a chance to read the play before casting or anything like that?
Yeah.
What was your initial first blush response to it when you read it?
Well, when I read it the first time, because it was a pretty fast audition, mm-hmm. like they gave me it and I had to be ready, I think, the next day.
Wow. Okay.
So I started reading for the first audition sections.
Okay.
You know, to get a better understanding of the character.
Sure.
And then I did a quick pass through. And so for the first audition before the callback, I mean, my focus was on memorizing the lines and just getting a good idea of what she was about. And then I read the whole script when I got the callback, like I sat down and hunkered down and really read it.
Right.
And, you know, I wasn't sure about what was going to happen, the style of it, you know?
Like, right.
But I mean, my focus was on the real person mm-hmm. in it,
right.
you know, because yeah. everything's blown out of proportion. Like
sure.
it's heightened, mm-hmm. but, reading it as an actress, I mean, my focus is on like the vulnerabilities and mm-hmm. the humor, because you can always tell a person's vulnerability from their humor usually. Mm-hmm. So that's my focus usually with any character.
Right.
But I was excited, you know, like once it started happening, because originally I said I couldn't do it because I just moved into an apartment in New York and I have a 50-pound bulldog and they don't allow dogs over 25 pounds.
Oh.
And I was like, I can't do it, you know? And, so we got letters of recommendation for my dog. Seriously, from Chicago Shakespeare, from Nickelodeon, and from Greg Kotis over here in town.
Right.
And Bella, my bulldog and I were both in Greg's last play. Bella played the Lamb of the Apocalypse.
Wow.
Yeah. So we got letters of recommendation sent in, and the
for here, you mean?
For the building where I was staying.
Oh, that's funny.
And now everybody loves her, you know? I mean, I was like, she's been in a play. She's been in a movie. She's the only dog allowed backstage at Chicago Shakespeare. How dare you?
Oh, that's awesome. The role was just hilarious. We talked to Allison earlier today, and we talked about the
I love her.
Oh, she was awesome. Yeah. She was awesome. We talked about the divisions between the characters, and then the realliances of people and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just works on so many levels.
Yeah.
I think you read in the beginning of the thing that says an undisclosed or a, what was the description for the disability?
Yes, young David.
Questionable,
right? How much input did you have on what exactly the disability was or to what level it was?
Allison was, you know, the process was incredible because around week two, I was talking to somebody about this last night. Allison started to, and I watched it happen. I mean, I felt it happen with me, but I watched it with everyone else too, where, you know, having a playwright in the room can, it's a plethora of things, you know, mm-hmm. it can't for actors, especially, you know, with a new play. And
right.
this was such an amazing experience with her in the room. And around week two, she started to actually, and I watched it, like, give over the characters, you know, like, yeah. like let them go and give, she gave them to us. Wow, so we cool. started to take the lead with it, right. you know, but she's very strong in her convictions as far as like what she is absolute about, mm-hmm. but she's extremely open-minded, and it was for the good of the play, you know? So when we talked about that stuff, I mean, we talked about it in two ways, you know, kind of like me, Lucia, like what I think is going on, mm-hmm. but also Frances's conviction
right.
as far as what she believes is going on. So right. after about week two, that's all I cared about.
Right.
You know, like it was kind of like I didn't even need to delineate. Mm-hmm, I just mm-hmm. believed I couldn't do it.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
And that I had chronic fatigue. But we talked a lot about what exactly happened 15 years ago with mm-hmm. Mark and the injuries mm-hmm. and then how it progressed to the husband leaving. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she's a drug addict. And I mean, 25 Vicodin a day.
That'll do it.
Makes you really tired.
Yeah.
you know?
That does yeah. tend to lead one to yeah. chronic fatigue.
And, yeah, to chronic fatigue yeah. and to depression and uselessness, mm. you know, and hopelessness and rage.
Mm.
So that was all much of a factor for me. And I have watched somebody in my life have that experience. Mm-hmm. So I had a personal viewpoint from
right.
it, you know?
Because you had something personal to connect to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's yeah. important. It's, I have to ask this question.
Yeah.
How was it to have a drill in your neck?
Oh, well, we worked on that a lot.
Oh, I would imagine so.
you know?
That's not something you improv. So.
I don't think not.
You know, the drill bit was, I mean, the prop department really did it where you feel it a little bit, but it doesn't hurt. But like getting it positioned exactly during the fight, mm-hmm. I take it over. Mm-hmm. It looks like Mark's pushing it down, mm-hmm. but I actually grab on and maneuver it. But to get it like, you just have to have a really good sense because it lands like right here and balances on my chin.
Oh, wow.
And so everything has to be in the perfect position. But right before it, we're struggling and fighting and stuff.
Sure.
So it's down to like a millisecond.
Oh, yeah. Well, the fights look fantastic. I mean, all that stuff at the end.
It's fun to fight.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, it's the funny thing is that the last time I did Humana, it was in 2001, and I was in a one-word title play by a playwright, a female playwright from Minnesota, Quake, and I killed people with a drill.
So it's becoming a theme then.
It's a niche.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a niche. Yeah, it's, well, it's specific and particular, but I'm hoping there'll be more work.
Yeah. Well, you know, you put that on your resume. And special skills.
Special skills. Drill killing.
Yeah. I'm sure your agent's happy about that, though, really. I mean,
only from Minnesota.
Yeah, really.
Right.
To write one word
title.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, we worked. It was about safety first, but then once we get that in order, we just have a good time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, all the relationships were believable, and the plays, I mean, the writing was, I mean, it was timed well, you know? I mean, it was just, it's, I think I can say that it was my favorite show. I mean, we've still got two to see, but thus far, it's my favorite show of this season, so yeah.
That's
congratulations.
Great. Thank you very much.
Do you know, what's next for you after Humana?
Well, I go back and I'm going back to New York to my apartment where I have to finish my kitchen. And, but I'm going right back into Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind. I'm a neo-futurist. Mm-hmm. I did this. It's been running for 20 years in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I've been a member there for 15 years, though I'm an alumni member now. But I just became a member in New York. And, it's our 5-year anniversary this year. But I go back into that. It's 30 plays in 60 minutes and we write everything and they change every week. And so I start that right away and I'm going to do a reading, for a play they're considering doing at Cherry Lane Theater.
Okay.
And, Daniela Topol's directing it. And, so I'm going to do that and, I'm working on the next solo show that I'm doing called The Understudy.
Awesome.
So,
do you have a website for the company, by the way? Is there a website?
Yeah, it's nyneofuturists.org.
Write that down, young David.
Yes.
We'll need that later.
NewYorkNeofuturists.org.
When we put this on the website, we'll link to it.
Awesome.
So,
yeah, double check that that's the right website.
We can Google it at that point. So,
but you can just Google neo-futurists or New York neo-futurists and it'll come up.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah.
It popped up. Yeah. Swim club.
Good. Well, listen, fantastic. And thanks for coming in and sitting with us and representing your entire cast.
Yeah, thank you for representing.
Don't make it too hard on them.
I was up till 5 in the morning. We were out till 4 or 5 in the morning, and I was like searching for pancakes. I was trying to make somebody take me for pancakes to Indiana. So I was like, I gotta eat breakfast. It's 5. But yeah, so it's been great. We have had a love fest with our cast.
Awesome.
It's fantastic.
Good. Yeah. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
If you love The Inexplicable Dumb Show like I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
Thanks to Allison Moore.
Yeah, thank you.
Playwright of the play
Slasher.
And Lucia Struss, who was one of the actors, one of
the actors. Trooper of the group, apparently.
I could have been really bad and said the actor of the troop, but I won't do that. I'm not going to pick on them that bad. So thanks to all those guys. And what a fun show, you know. I mean, it was a little spooky, you know. Let's be honest. You know, starts out with it. Well, give a whole lot away, but...
Well, I mean, I think it was interesting that it did tackle some serious issues, but yet it wasn't preachy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? In a lighthearted way. No, it was really, really well done. A lot of fun stuff. And a couple of really good interviews out of it as well. Let's see, next week for 142, which actually is going to be our final Humana week.
End of the road,
for 2009, but we... we're going to go out with a bang because we actually have a special interview with Charles Mee.
Outstanding.
And we're going to revisit Wild Blessings, which was the adaptation of the Wendell Berry poems that they did. We're going to talk to Adrian Alice Hansel, who was one of the sort of co-collaborators with Mark on that.
Outstanding.
So that's what we're going to do. Hey, we'll see you.
Bye.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No E's. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.